Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan. If you'd like to listen to bonus episodes, go sign up to the Patreon. That's patreon.com. Anyway, you'll find a way. Hello and welcome to this episode of the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan. Early this week, I was fortunate enough to go and see a band called For Real perform in Austin, where I presently reside. It's Virgil and Elliot. I've been aware of their music for some time. Didn't know they were from Luxembourg. That was very exciting. Let me tell you, one of the best performances I've ever seen in any medium ever. And I had to leave 10 minutes early to do my own gig, a comedy show across town, and I was devastated to have to leave. They were that good, and I'm very blessed that they sat down for an interview, what I hope is the last interview on the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan that takes place outside without a industry standard camera and wind guards for the microphone. Yeah. So we were there, and this, it looked like a great neighborhood in America. And if I was in Australia and we were living next to this park, this would be great. Children can run around.
Yeah.
And in America, it's a real liability. So, yeah.
Really?
A lot of disruption and shots at night.
No way.
Oh, it's exciting. It's a great time. The kids love it. For real? Where am I? There. I'm a big fan.
Thank you, James.
Second Sweat in, what is it, 2020? Early 2020?
2019.
It was late 2019.
Out. Yeah.
I got sent that by a friend and it's great. And I bring your names up all the time. I did a podcast with Kieran J. Callan that couldn't come out because I was in Ohio and I was very depressed. And every time I watch it, I can't do it.
All right.
It's too sad. But your music makes me question like meritocracy in a serious way because it's so good.
How so?
And it feels very popular and it feels like the right, like it feels pop music. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I feel like you should be winning Grammys for what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Should be no impediment between that and a massive audience.
Whoa.
And then I go, well, whatever failure I have, it's okay, because For Real aren't the number one, you know.
I'm glad that makes you feel that way. You know, we're working hard at it, but I'm glad it makes you feel that way.
I mean, it's a perfect level of homoerotic incest brothers. I love it. The dance moves are tremendous.
Thank you.
I'm not going to goof out about it. We'll just do a normal podcast, but I had to get that out of the way.
Yeah, get it out of the way.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Ah, and it's, you're on tour now for the album.
Correct, yeah. So we're doing the second show of the Forever Tour tonight in Austin, Texas. And this is our first, like, proper American headline tour.
Yeah.
Touring the album.
Did you come here for South by Southwest years ago?
We've been to Austin quite a lot.
Several
times for South by, 3 times, I think. And each time we've, you know, packed it the fuck out. Done like 10 shows or whatever. And so, you know, we've got a little bit of an audience here. And it's cool to come back here, like, not during South by. Because obviously we're getting some more Austin, like proper Austin experience.
Oh, it'll be out there.
Proper Austin folks.
Oh, the proper experience is out there, boy. Let me tell you. You get on 6th Street at night, there's a man with a snake.
Oh, yeah.
He has a big snake.
We've taken photos with him.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful
first
snake.
First time we were in town, I think the first day we were here.
Outside that big church on SoCo, we were like, yep, this is perfect Texas content.
Yeah.
The internet agreed.
Well, there are... Have you been to the Barton Springs?
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
That's number one. I did my first ever flip there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's a big one. First flip.
I fell over on the concrete on the way to do the flip.
Ah.
And
you still went for the flip.
No, yeah, that should have been, it should have been a bad portent.
That's grit. That's determination. Yeah, most people would take that as a bad omen.
No, I was, some people were watching me getting ready to do the flip. I couldn't back out of the flip.
You kind of had to.
I was devastated.
Front or back flip?
I only did the front flip. I'm told the back flip is easier.
The back flip is easier.
It feels like a bigger mental hurdle to get over.
It is. But so physically, it makes
sense. He's a back
flip
guy, and I'm a front flip guy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an all flips guy. Come on, let's be real here.
Okay, yeah, here we go.
I'm also not doing good flips. Like, I didn't get especially airborne. This is not a great diving body.
I just kind of fall forward long enough to...
Oh, I flail. It's like monkey style.
But isn't it a joy? I mean,
it's
just
such a joy.
Spinning through the air.
Barton Springs is a very special place. I understand why Austinites have it deep in their heart. Actually, if we have time before soundcheck today, I think we're going to try and go for a quick dip because the weather's so nice.
What is?
Unseasonably warm, you know?
It's a... Man, it just doesn't stop. The heat. There was like 1 week of gray. And then
it usually abates during South by when the weather is fucking terrible.
What, it's like rainy and drizzly?
Yeah, it's rainy and windy.
Every time we've been,
like
it's just been like
cold,
dreadful.
I've never been here for South by Southwest. We in Adelaide were against it because we were sister cities with Austin for a long time.
Oh, really?
And they were going to bring the festival to Australia. Uh-huh. And then Sydney. They didn't. Everybody goes with Sydney. We suck. It's fine. We know.
That's a letdown.
I will cover this. I feel like Austin, like, it's grown a lot over the last 10, 15 years. Yeah. And, like, there are still, like, good, nice, old, weird things in Austin that you can do and eke out a living.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of medium-density housing 40 minutes away. Like, it just, big sprawl.
Yeah. It's
very hard to walk in a city.
It's pretty quintessentially American in that way.
Did you grow up in France or America?
We grew up in, born in Paris and then grew up in Luxembourg.
Get out of town.
Of all places.
No.
And then moved around Europe when we graduated high school.
We wish to remain as we are. I think that's their motto. Is
absolutely.
That
how do you know
how
that?
The fuck do you
I've
know
got
that?
A friend who's just moved to Luxembourg.
Really?
No
he
way.
Discovered like remote Luxembourger citizenship. And so you get like free admission to the university and you get to live there.
What?
It's like every day in Luxembourg is incredible. The Pope was here. And
Yeah.
You know, all the houses are nice. He's like learning French. He loves it. Berlin is like not that far.
Yeah, Brussels, Paris,
Brussels,
Berlin,
yeah.
The Amsterdam. They're
you
all like
get on a train
away.
And you
yeah.
go.
Wild.
You cannot catch a train anywhere in this country.
Yeah, I mean, there's only freight trains in Texas, aren't there?
There's a freight train right there that would wake me up repeatedly.
Yeah, there you go.
You can't really see. It's just over that creek.
Won't take you anywhere, but wakes you up. It's just so rude.
I mean, you could definitely have a swag and get on an old-timey fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can get somewhere in 2 hours, but who knows where. Probably just out of town.
Yeah, probably somewhere you don't really want to go.
It'd be great.
Luxembourg, that was kind of a interesting and strange and good place to grow up.
Children in Luxembourg.
Yeah. And then I moved back to Paris after I graduated high school. This guy went to London, did our own things, and yeah, now we're in the beautiful Los Angeles.
Why? What took you to LA?
Music, I mean.
Yeah.
We both felt like we'd been in our respective cities in Europe for long enough, and we felt the pull of the U.S.
All right, because I feel
music
this as well.
Scene,
we have like American citizenship. Our father's American. And we'd never lived in the U.S. until now, and I guess there was some kind of like America shape hole in our hearts somewhere.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
And
it's a big hole.
Yeah, it's a giant
Luxembourg
hole.
Size hole could go undiagnosed for years.
It did, and it, let me tell you, it did. We only rediscovered it recently.
Yeah,
we're like, what's that?
No, I don't know. You know, we'd grown up in Europe, like around these different places, and just like, I don't know. I think also just like Paris never really felt like home, even though it kind of was, and London was definitely never like really home. And
sure.
I think we wanted to be in the same city.
Yeah.
That
was the number one impetus for that, is that we wanted to take for real further, and by, you know, and we needed to be in the same place for that.
It is this is what America is. There's so many people, there's so much money. They like going out to do things. There's opportunity here. But there is something to be said for European style cities of getting around and going down to the boulangerie.
Don't we fucking love it.
That There's a
if we could complain about that for a moment, that would mean a lot
to
me.
There's a boulangerie-sized hole in my heart, I'll tell you that.
Australian cities are built much more like American cities.
More like European.
So we have big sprawling suburbs as well, but the downtowns, you can just walk around, you can live there. It's very nice. Adelaide's city is, we don't even call it, we call it a CBD.
The Central Business District.
Yeah, nice. Downtown has a rougher edge than you would find over here. But this thing of coming here and being like, there's no city. Like city after city that I tour to, there is no. It's like eight strip malls connected by four freeways.
I mean, there's this,
and you do the best you can.
There's this anecdote that I read. I keep on going on about it, but of these like touring mishaps over the years of various bands, and this one band in like the 80s or whatever from England who had a show in Los Angeles, and they drove to LA, and then they drove past and they didn't even notice that they had gone through LA. They were like in San Diego. They were like, wait, how did we miss Los Angeles? And it does kind of feel like that.
Because you think of it being, you know, La La Land and glitzy. And I remember the first time I saw the skyline of LA, I thought, that is smaller than Perth.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable.
Can count them on one hand. Yeah. Any skyscraper.
Now, it goes on forever. And it's beautiful and diverse. I enjoyed first time there. I got off at the airport. I had a 12-hour layover. I thought I'll walk around LA. I didn't know that was not possible.
Not an option.
I had a suitcase. I went to Venice Beach. Huge mistake to do that at 10 in the morning.
With a suitcase?
Just walking like the most beautiful gay bodybuilding guys on the beach and the richest people on the Esplanade and maybe 100 schizophrenics shouting into the ocean. It was really, it was something. And then after that, I wanted to go to a library to hang out for a few hours, and the library closest to the airport was Inglewood, and I got to go to Inglewood. And I felt more comfortable there than anywhere else. Like, it's like, oh, this is a real community.
This
is a real, like, city. It's a bunch of, LA seems like it's a bunch of places looking after each other.
It's an agglomeration of different,
the archipelago.
Different cities.
Yeah.
And it's, but it's fascinating like that. And for us, coming from where we were coming from, it felt really exotic and really new and really fresh. We were considering moving to New York because we knew New York. We have family there. And
that and felt our family's like, from there as
and
well.
And that felt like a closer move. But then we were like, wait, that's just, we're just going to replicate our European experiences on a on a slightly bigger scale.
It does feel like Europe on steroids.
You know?
It's a friend said that when they were over there recently.
Yeah. And, you know.
Exactly.
But then we went to LA and played a bunch of shows and just kind of got stars in our eyes. We were like, wow, this is, and we made fast friends with like, you know, key people there in our, who are still in our community today.
A bunch of people actually. And actually one of the first times we met, first times we went was with Kieran J. Callanan, who we were just talking about.
I met Kieran in LA the first time I went to LA, and it blew my mind. I was a fan of his music and then became friends
with
him.
But he like introduced us to just like a whole bunch of people within a week that we spent
there
together.
He's an unbelievably connected man.
It's true. And actually, Elliot met Kieran
here
in Austin the first time we came South by Southwest.
Does he also communicate with you with a series of strange haikus and line breaks? Is that all of his texting?
I don't think he's ever done a normal text. Or normal.
It was very strange to meet him after texting for some time.
And right.
You're an extremely normal, like, we can just talk. You're a guy.
Did you expect him to, like, go off in haikus the whole time?
Yeah, wizard poetry.
Yeah, yeah.
I was kind of looking forward to
it. I feel that.
And I think for the most recent video with the guy with the long, the long penis video.
The long schlong man.
The long schlong video. Someone came to a show I was doing in Adelaide and said, have you met Kieran J. Callan? I was like, yes. He said, I have to show you this. And he just showed me a video he'd made on his phone of a guy with a long penis. He's like, will you show this to Kieran? I was like, okay. And I'm glad it worked out. But that is so often how things creatively work out.
Oh, so that you've got to be in place. Behind the...
He came to me and said, please, let me show you the digital. It's big penis. It goes on. It's the whole world. The world's a penis. And
I can see how that
I was like, I think he will go for this. I don't know if he'll respond, but I'll send him something.
That video is just outrageous, and it's maybe the best video to come out this year.
Well, I'm heartbroken that it feels like the machinery for music videos. You have such great music videos.
Thank you.
I don't know how long it takes to work on the dance moves. I don't know what comes first, the dance moves or the songs, but the outfits, the fringes, the fringe era was...
The fringe era was the whole
sensational
thing.
Sensational.
yeah, it was really a moment in time. We still have a vault with all our fringe, but we've moved on since then.
Did you have to comb the fringe? The long fringe?
Well, that was part of the problem, is it was very hard to maintain and wash and everything, so we just kind of, you know, started thinking about alternative outfits and solutions. But yeah, thank you. The videos, this guy's a director and, you know, by trade, or used to be, I guess.
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's just like all the other shit we make with For Real, where it's just like, at first it's just like, okay, what's the best and easiest and most like wow way we can represent what we're doing here, and like, you know, we just really break it down to its core essentials and just like, okay, like, how is For Real best enjoyed? Like, just like, boom, just the two of us performing. So, you know, the first video we ever released, which was Second Sweat, that song, it was just like, all right, it's just gonna be like you're going to a For Real show and you don't know what you're getting into, so it's just us with the stage costumes, nothing else, just empty warehouse, you know.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of built it little bit by little bit from there, you know, kind of built the story with every video and just like, you know, more outfits, more setups, more whatever.
Well, it
every
seems
time
like the live show, you have it like a, you have a backing track and it's the two of you with microphones.
Yeah, that's it.
That's, it seems like that is the, would be the best way to tour in terms of ease and being able to show up and do a thing.
Yeah.
But then to make it difficult for yourselves, I like very much with the outfits and the dancing and the,
yeah,
put the attention where it should be, where it can make a real difference.
You have to have some hurdles in order to overcome. That's what makes a story worth telling. You know what I mean? Like, and I think it was, but it's funny because people are like, oh my God, you guys are so lucky. You have this super light setup and you can just tour so easily. We're like, no, it's the other way around. We started this project and we came from very much a band background with, you know, amps and gear and stuff like that.
Sounds horrible.
Like, let's do the opposite of that.
Sounds genuinely terrifying.
And actually, the first time we came to South by Southwest, we were like, okay, now we have this ultra light setup. Let's buy some plane tickets and go to Austin, drink South by, and figure it out. And that was also in no small part inspired by the way Al Cameron a few years prior had done South by.
Backing track and a saxophone?
Backing track and a sax on like the street corners in Austin during South by, and we were like,
yeah,
that's brilliant. And yeah, that was part of the thinking for sure.
Yeah. And we just showed up, you know, obviously people book their South by shows like however many months in advance, and we just literally rocked up like 2 days before the festival started.
I'm just gonna ask this. Do you want us to cut you out of this video? Really? All right, it's just filming that. Have a good one. Sorry. No, you can do it. I absolutely don't mind. I wondered if you want me to cut you out of it. I don't know, but I just thought I would be polite and ask. No, that's all good. Have a good one. Ah, the beautiful train going by.
Nice.
Well, this is. Oh yeah, that'll keep going. But if people can hear it, that's great. I want them to be able to hear it. Add a little depth. That'll go on for the next 4 minutes.
We're living in the real world.
You want to take
here.
A break? Or
No. We'll power through. This is because as a stand-up, you just go, and they have a microphone there for you, and it's very easy. But it's very lonely.
That's,
I feel you have a better set. You get to go together.
That's so crazy to me because. Yes, we experience a similar sort of thing where it's like an empty stage and two mics, but we do go together and we have very much like, you know, there's songs to keep us to a time constraint and time limit and stuff. If I just had to walk up on stage alone in a normal clothing and just talk into a microphone, I would.
Brother, it's dreadful.
Would I have a heart attack?
Sounds so terrifying.
Yeah.
But I mean, the bad thing is, I think that the work is done. You're doing the new stuff as a comedian. What I envy very much is you get the album to come out, you know, the song comes, as I avoid this peach cobbler on the table, you get the album to come out, and then you know the songs that people will like, and you get to sing them for people.
Hey, the grass is always greener on the other side.
Well, you must get bored eventually.
Well, because that's
songs.
What every touring musician will tell you. Is like, oh, I can't be bothered to play this fucking song again, or especially that hit that we put out like all the way at the start of our career, and we're still having to play it every time. It's like, you know, I just want to play all this new stuff. So, you know.
Oh.
There's two sides of the coin, but I think for us also, we used to do it more like stand-up comedians, where we didn't have any music out for the longest time. The whole start of the project, there was no songs or one song out, and we booked all these shows and went in completely cold because the crowd had never heard of us, which was really good, like training ground, you know, because when you have to convince people that you're worth their attention. I mean, you know how it is.
Oh, no, it gets you excited. Was there a song called Fancy Man?
Classic Man.
Excuse me, I remember reading that in a comment. I've never heard it. But people would demand it.
That one
repeatedly.
Is in the vaults.
Okay.
It never got released. And we stopped playing it for some obscure reason that even we don't know. But
the people seem to have called out for it.
It was a popular...
Yeah.
It was a fan favorite during the start of
and
For Real.
And who knows,
sure.
We might just bring it back one day out of nowhere because
it was good. You know, it had some good moves, you know. I think
it had
people,
some good moves. I can't remember them.
Me neither.
We'll find some video.
It's funny, the buried classic, because Tusk, I think, was like that.
Yeah,
That was their... They would just play that casually for years as a...
Mm-hmm.
A warm-up song, and then a sound guy at some point said, we should probably put that out. That's pretty good.
Yeah, right.
I remember there's a rapper called Lacutus who was touring with Das Racist many years ago, and he did a song called Dennis Quaid, Bitch, and that was the whole lyrical component. He said, I'm Dennis Quaid, bitch. Dennis Quaid, that. Bitch. He never released it, but everyone there for a moment. This is a number one hit single.
Yeah. God, the zeitgeist.
I love a sleeper hit, you know, where it's like...
Yeah.
It's a secret in the back catalog. And then in years, I think Radiohead did this for years, that they would have songs that would just never come out. You had to go to a live show to hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the whole premise of the start of our live show. People were like, can you send us some music? And we were like, no, actually.
You have to come along to the show.
You have to come to the show. And that the first time we showed up in this city, we were literally knocking on doors at different clubs until somebody, our friend Sean Dickerson, actually opened the door and was like, what do you guys want? And we were just like, we just had a briefcase and we were dressed up in our... car salesman suits, and we were like, we just want to play a show, just, and he was like, what do you make, like, can I listen? And we were like, no, you can't, but trust me, it's really good.
Like,
and he was like, all right, whatever, fuck it, I'll take a chance. And he got us our first show here, and then it kind of
snowballed,
unlocked a few doors from there. It was funny,
but yeah, but also that kind of like you know, that terrifying feeling of just like empty stage mic that we were just talking about, like, that was very much the reason for which we were like, okay, we can't just go up there and just sing, we have to do something, so let's dance.
Yeah,
at least if we have a dance routine,
no one's
we know what we're doing.
At the very top level in stadiums, people have choreographed dances.
Yeah,
very few indie musicians, I feel, there are people who boogie, there are people who have some moves, sure, but full choreographed dances with the audience, I feel like this is a niche.
Yeah, it was just I think it was to get rid of nerves, you know, initially. Because we didn't really know what to do with our hands and feet on stage, because we were just used to playing instruments on stage. And we were like, what the hell are we going to do with our limbs, you know?
I was terrified. I was in a couple bands. I was so scared. It was so much scarier than stand-up. Because I feel like you don't 100% know how it's going. Unless it's like up and dancing music and you can see that everybody's moving. If you're playing like a restrained guitar piece, soulful, it's very hard to tell how that's being received until the end of the song. Stand up every 6 seconds, you know exactly how it's, you can hear the
laugh. But you know there's
respond.
I think the crowd reaction also is sometimes it's very obvious, but sometimes it's very random. You can put your heart out on the stage and deliver what is actually a stunning performance and get tepid reception.
Yeah.
And if the crowd is, you know, drunk and partying already, you can do whatever and people are going to cheer and whoop.
Up, sure.
You know what I mean? So that's not either.
Well, how helpful is the room? What are the best rooms you've ever played in? What are the best rooms in America?
There's some storied ones, but... Oh, hello.
Isn't that nice?
I love that.
You get so many birds. You get hummingbirds. I saw hummingbirds for the first time. That blew my mind. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
The blue jays.
We love the grackles. We're a big fan of the grackles.
What is a grackle?
Is that a grackle?
Those little black
they sound like modular synths.
Yeah.
I'll keep an ear out for the grackle.
Yeah. Programmed.
The glitchiest birds.
Man, I'm going to miss...
Of the Western world.
I'm going to miss living here. My daughter learned how to do the monkey bars on those monkey bars. Excuse me, I didn't. It's just, it was convenient to do it here. I thought it would be a cool place to do it.
And then it turns out to be memory lane for you.
Oh, haunted. There's a statue. There's a statue of an armadillo butterfly bat over there. It was for a young Hispanic quarterback who was killed in his prime in, I think, the 70s, and his parents built this park for the community.
Wow.
Oh, that's the titular Ricky Guerrero.
That is Ricky Guerrero. I was accidentally calling it Eddie Guerrero Park for a long time after the wrestler. But no, it is. And, you know, it's like there's an Australian cafe not far down that way.
Is there?
You get sick of the American coffee.
Okay.
It's very nice.
I already am.
We really fixate on the coffee.
I know, yeah.
It's, I think it's the only thing I've had some thoughts about it as to why we... it takes a long time to get good at cooking, you know, to become a Michelin star chef.
Yeah.
But if for 6 months all you do is work on your coffee making skills, you can become actually one of the better coffee makers. So
that
I think it was the fastest way to go. We can do something well in the culinary sphere. It was lazy.
It's a good way to think about
it. It's lazy. Yeah, I like that. I like that theory. But if you're good at something, you know.
Oh, it's beautiful. Requires, I mean, we needed to be good at something.
Yeah.
This is hard to have no... I mean, are you the biggest Luxembourger cultural exports?
No.
At the moment? Who's number one?
Brian Malko of Placebo went to our high school in Luxembourg.
Yeah, that was kind of the claim to fame of the school. Like, in the
he famously hated his time there.
Okay.
Really hated it.
Yeah.
Which I can understand. When you're a teenager growing up there, it feels very small very quickly. Because it is. It's tiny.
And I think... you know, whatever cultural offer was, around at his time was probably hella frustrating and dismal compared to what even we got to experience. So,
but we still felt that way. And I think that pushed us into making our own stuff pretty early on, which was a great motivator.
Hopping on the proverbial trains to, go visit the next city and catch gigs wherever and, discover all of that. So
this is a gift, I think, to be able to... Oh, yeah. No one gets to do that.
I'm very grateful for having grown up there now in hindsight. And, when we go visit, we still have a lot of connections there, although no family left, but a lot of friends. And we're going there on this tour, actually.
Yeah. Where do you play in Luxembourg? What is it?
But that's the thing. It's like
that's a great room. You were asking about good rooms. That's a really, really great room. Yeah. We're playing... We played there on our last... We did a stopover on our last tour. We're going again. It's called De Goede Velen, which means the good savage.
Yeah.
It used to be... That same bar used to be called D-Click. And it was owned
by... They changed it to The Good Savage?
Yeah, because change of ownership.
Yeah, but The Good Savage feels like a name that you might have to change from in this political milieu.
Oh, you think
going to...
No, like, I think it's a reference to... It's a reference to Rousseau, the...
What's the good... The noble savage.
The noble savage, exactly. But anyways, it's...
I still think savage gets a little pushback in the current... Even the best savage. The number one
even the number one
savage.
Yeah, right. It's still frowned upon, you think?
Excuse my terrible nicotine habit.
Please indulge. I'll do it vicariously through you. So that's a room where we grew up playing a lot of shows, like our sort of high school projects.
Like first shows.
First shows were there, very sweaty, very drunken times. And then now we can go back and sort of have it's a small room. It feels like the floorboards are creaking when everybody's jumping up and down.
Do you feel this was a joy getting to have the creative development in a place where it didn't necessarily matter? I don't know how to describe that. Like, I started out in Adelaide, and a lot of good people come from Adelaide with stand-up, and there are some good bands that have come out of there. But I think because there's a sense that you can do whatever you want, because
there's no public eye and there's no competition, really. Or it's...
Like, I think if you're starting out in LA, something in your mind
100%.
Permanently would be going, very good, this could be it for me.
Super grateful not to have grown up in that sort of environment for our creative purposes.
Yeah, and I think, in many ways, like... It's not something I've really thought about like that, but could definitely be responsible for the shit we're making not really fitting in any kind of obvious box, I think. Like, 100%. I don't know, where it's like, because we didn't have, we've been part of like a scene here and there in Paris and in London, in Luxembourg, whatever scene, we were in that, but it was like never a kind of... globally recognized.
You get to be D-Class A.
There were no magazines writing about what was happening in Luxembourg. Yeah. You know what I mean? Ever. Culturally speaking. And this has changed, and they're doing good work, but like it was an interesting place.
No, I think to not have that can be good. I mean, again, at some point, when there's a scene and people start fitting into it in a way that doesn't make sense, I don't know how many plaid wearing long-haired, slightly detuned guitar bands came out of Adelaide back-to-back where everyone was allergic to choruses because that wasn't... People would look down on you for that. But broke my heart. Excuse me.
Where was Silverchair from?
Silverchair, intriguingly, from Newcastle, tiny steel town.
Uh-huh.
So they were very free to go and do their... Also, their most interesting work had no impact in America at all, I think.
Yeah,
Frogstomp, the Nirvana stuff blew up big. And then after that, I don't know if you followed their later work.
No, see, I'm living proof.
Daniel Johns, very straight. He did some nice Beatles-y, electro-y heartfelt, strange piano ballads after that. Huge in Australia.
That sounds great.
Because I think after the original work, the hard men of Newcastle had an excuse to listen to a man on the piano pour out his feelings.
Oh, and they're like, yes, finally, I get to be sensitive behind doors.
Oh, it's a beautiful. I don't know. Do you know the song "Delight" by Common?
I don't think I do.
No. There are times when you'll need someone. I will be by your side. Oh, baby. It's just a beautiful. The great chorus. There is a light that shines special for you and me. And it's so saccharine. And I was at a black nightclub and all these guys are singing. These big, strong, tough guys are singing this beautiful, strange, special for you and me. And it's like, this has given you an opportunity to touch base with that.
Yeah.
You
it's
know,
really
this is someone you respect and they've given you the sensitive
I see that. That's a good. We're going to listen to that in the car right after this.
Oh, now you've heard my version. I don't know that you'd ever want to go back and hear the
I liked your version. I was in there.
No, if I could sing, it would be great.
If I could sing.
If I could sing.
It's a great perverse that he's done that.
Yeah. Very perverse. Like much of his work.
These bangs happen in this. That was a balloon. But let me tell you, at night, the bangs in this neighborhood were out of control. It's one thing I will not miss. The gunshots in the air. You wouldn't get. LA is very tightly gun controlled. Texas, they love just celebrating.
Texas is definitely on the wilder side, but LA still gets
a little loose.
A little loose on that side of things. Echo Park has been massively gentrified over the last, I don't know what it is, 15 years, but still, there's still some
I realize I know nothing about Echo Park.
Elements.
I think there's a Lightspeed Champion lyric about it, but I don't know what that.
Oh yeah,
there must be. There must be.
He's out. He's had a big creative change. And I know him. I've met him. I love the Lightspeed Champion work early on.
We're huge Lightspeed Champion fans.
But also before that,
Test Icicles.
Love that first.
That's
record.
Three absurdly different.
Crazy.
I love that
first. That Test
True
Icicles
Chameleon.
Record. I was blown away by that. I loved that as a sort of in my late teens. I think I was.
Am I crazy to think that this is kind of the album cover of that record was kind of in this vibe?
I'm picturing something more like the Daft Punk record. Something in that.
That's something else we're gonna listen to on tour.
Yeah, I guess so.
Test Icicles. I mean, also, what a fucking name.
I know. And then I only went back because of the. I thought this man with a cardigan was in a.
Yeah.
Hardcore band?
Yeah. It's true. He's had a few very stark, like, creative, like.
Big shifts. Big gear changes.
And like that, but he's.
And then producing for the stars.
Yeah, he's killing it.
Do you do this? Would you.
And I mean, he's now in his, like, what.
Classical music.
I know. His, like,
is he doing the classical music
phase? It's, you know.
Classical music would. I was on the blog back in the day, and that would always. He would always venture a string quartet or something, and then just disappear back into the other thing he was doing.
But I think he's kind of gone full into that as far as I know. Great. Mad props.
Beautiful.
Beautiful
to see.
For sure.
And here.
Dev Hynes. Check him out.
Dev Hynes, everyone.
I did a. There was a show called Rage, was the music video. Show in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like someone come and go, here are my favorite music videos.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be invited onto that and I never did. I'm very unsuccessful in my own country. The Prophet, you know, all these things.
All the best Australians are, don't worry about
it. But I think yours was the first video that when I made my own just on YouTube. I thought that was handy. And I was so happy to have it there. But there's not, you have the best music videos that anyone's making. I think they're up there. They're in the top A tier of the categorization.
It means a
lot.
How
do we get great music videos out to people? Because the old machinery, MTV is not playing music videos the way they used to.
It's very sad. It's true.
People fall into a wormhole
sometimes. It was such a key component of like the music we were listening to as teenagers was how we first heard the music was usually like on TV with a video, and that would like kind of sear it into your brain forever and ever.
Oh yeah, and I mean very responsible for, you know, the kind of world building we're doing with this project.
Absolutely.
And you know where it's like so linked, you know, the performance and the visuals to the music, it's all like, you know, just that package.
But it's true, nobody pushes those music videos onto unsuspecting teens anymore, not in the same way, and I think that's a sad thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, la-di-da, a million things with the democratization of, like, fuck, I said that word weirdly, but you know what I mean.
Democratization. Like, that felt good. Felt.
No, just like how everyone can shoot anything, anytime now, and it's like, you know, people are posting new music videos to TikTok like every day basically now, and yeah. there's more and more effort going into smaller and smaller things in yeah. a way. So it's like, what's the actual impact of putting like something that's deemed more like high art onto like a platform like that? And like, you know,
I gotta tell you, my perverse joy is when I'm in a new city and the people are advertising their terrible songs and music videos on Instagram, and you'll be, do you know, like they narrow cast into that city, and I'm like clicking along, and then it's like
they push it through the
a genuine schizophrenic having a folk album, and you get to just, I would never get to see that if they hadn't for some reason put $35 into an ad.
Yeah, now
see,
this is the new public access TV, which is kind of amazing actually that not everything is super curated, and you can you get the psycho stuff as well as the good stuff, and it's great.
The curation falling apart is in some ways great.
Very
the
nice.
The gatekeepers are gone. You it know, also I, does make it harder to amplify and to find good things. Like if I'm
read
just waiting
crazy
for
like,
shit for days.
I read something crazy, like the amount of songs that come out every day on the platforms is like, it blew my mind. It was like,
yeah, yeah. There was this one day at the end of 24 that they calculated that on that one day there was more music that came out than the whole of 1981.
And that, you know, just to give you a sort of,
I'm pretty sure that was
yeah, perspective figure. And yeah, no, exactly. That's the kind of figure I'm talking about. And it's just like, yeah, on one side it's like almost disheartening because you're like, how do you cut through all of that? But on the other side it's completely freeing because you're like, fuck
yeah, I'm gonna do what I want.
I'm gonna do exactly what I want, and there's no more gatekeeping. It's just like you find your audience and your audience finds you, you know.
I think rappers have an easy time of it because everyone gets a feature, and the albums are so full of features, so it's easy to put people on.
Oh yeah,
and there is less room for that in non-rap music.
Yeah I agree. But
it does happen sometimes. I enjoyed that Metronomy album.
The collab
yeah,
record.
I thought that was one of his better records in.
And I think
a long
it was.
Time.
We felt it was really cool of them to sort of use their, you know, their clout and their influences as like a bigger indie band to like kind of push that and be like, no, we're gonna take all these more like lesser known people that we really fuck with and put them on with our name on it and just like put it out ASAP. Yeah. You know, I think that's a great. Great thing. But
it's democracy falling up into what does Socrates say? It shouldn't work that way. It shouldn't become was it when a small group of people run the show?
Oligarchy. Yeah.
It's meant to go straight to tyranny, I think.
Yeah. Straight to tyranny. Yeah. I mean, artists have to be tyrants in a way, you know, like I'm thinking of Ian Svenonius, another artist and friend of ours who wrote a few books about bands and the
highly recommend
dynamics of band. He wrote this book called The Supernatural Strategies.
I like that.
For what is it?
Starting a rock
Start
and roll band.
Forming a rock and roll band.
Do you feel tyrannical with your like? Obviously, the videos and the music are meticulous, and the
there's definite tyranny within For Real, between us, but from us onto the world, and it's all different levels of tyranny.
I'm kept in its place. Tyranny can be very beautiful.
Yeah, there's no democracy involved.
I think of like Stanley Kubrick making people shoot Eyes Wide Shut over a year and a half, or something.
Yeah.
Just to get it exactly. Nicole Kidman's bum has to be exactly as I wish it to be. it's strange because it's the only time that I become a bad man is in stand-up. I used to, like, I directed a couple comedy musicals, and I'm so loosey-goosey, go with the flow every other time of my life. But when it comes to what's on stage, you go, no,
yeah,
we're doing it right.
Yeah, I think it's also, like, that feeling where, like, you know, it's a big effort. It's a lot of work. And, like, if you're not really doing it exactly like you want,
then why?
Yes. Then what, you know, what's, it's not really worth doing it. Of course, a lot of people would disagree with that. I'm not sure I fully agree with that either, but it's like...
It's a push and pull between that and the feeling of like wanting complete control and also having to let go because you collaborate. There's other people on set. You entrust some decision-making to other people and all of a sudden...
And allow space for like beautiful accidents as well and things that will take it to somewhere you never thought would be like even possible, you know?
But it is very... The fear that mediocrity creeps in must be... I mean, in comedy, I let no one touch it. I mean, this is like, if someone will suggest an idea, I think that's probably a very good idea. I cannot allow that idea. I don't know why. I'm very distrusting.
Because it's not yours.
More open. Yeah, something about... Right. I mean, what is the creative impulse that one is listening to determine if something is good or not?
I mean, you know, we're guilty of something similar, you know, with our first record where we, at some point along the road, we're like, no, we're going to have to be the writers, producers, yeah. you know, arrangers, composers, everything on the record.
Like, we do,
this needs to be the most DIY thing ever, because it needs to be like unfiltered, pure, like photorealism,
yes.
like from the source. And then, you know, we can open it up kind of thing.
You've got to know what it is before you let other people come and manifest it.
Exactly.
With each other, I mean, to have the two of you being creatively, you must butt heads at some point.
Oh, different, of course we do, but...
Where are the big arguments?
There's quite a lot, I guess, like, you know, in terms of workflow, like, we work in, like, maybe slightly different ways, which have become very complementary, and it works great, but...
Definitely.
That's kind of sometimes where we butt heads, where, like, I'm very OCD
yep.
about a lot of things, especially in terms of like, you know, meticulousness and like
he's a list maker, and I'm not. Let's put that. I think that's what it boils down to, really, like at the end of the day. You know, he'll make a very, very meticulously detailed list about what needs to happen in a certain
color coded
song, and it's all color coded, and there's dates, and it needs to happen. And I'm much more like. I can be a lot more sort of up in the air about it, and
well, it feels like a good look at that. It's the shirts, it's the yin yang, it's the
diet. Well, you know,
it's been a lot of how this project has been like working and kind of living on healthy.
Do you feel they need to explain when you feel passionate about something creatively? Are you able to put it into words as to why you think that's a good idea? Or are there times where you go, this simply has to be the way it is because I feel very strongly about
it? That's one thing that works very seamlessly with us, I think, is the fact that we don't need to explain much to each other, because we have such a history of like the same... You know, we grew up in this, like, in this, listening to the same things and looking at watching the same films. And so we have an understanding of, like, what the other sees in a thing. And they don't have to be like, hey, we have to do this because of ABC and then ABC. You know, it's, like, very instinctive.
Yes.
And I think we trust each other's gut feelings. So there's a layer of communication there that doesn't have to exist, because that's when things get a little fucked up, when you can't communicate things properly.
I'm thinking about this a lot in the bigger industry creatively, when you have to explain something, it can be impossible.
Things get lost in translation. People interpret it however they're going to interpret it, but when you don't,
there's not always a justification for something fluid.
It's just, it has to be like that because it has to, because it's going to be good.
And one of the
<That's it. laughs>
one of the best, I think, explainers of this whole thing was that the late great David Lynch, famously was always saying, like, not like, I'm not gonna write about
I'm desensitized to the banks, it doesn't move
I think
me
the
anymore.
Kids have guns.
You know, it's like, critics can write about my films, like, I don't need to tell anyone what they mean, you know,
the
like,
film,
even I don't know what they mean, kind of thing.
He was like, the film, like, is the explanation.
If it works, just, it works,
and that's it. And
I remember I watched a video of him smoking his American Spirit cigarettes, getting very angry during the filming of one of the later Twin Peaks seasons.
Uh-huh.
And he's going, like, they're giving me no time. We need time to play, to get interesting things. Like, that he's there. He doesn't even know what he's looking for, but he's finding it. He has a framework, and he'll find it eventually.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and that goes with this whole, like, you know, catching the big fish.
Yeah.
Like, meditative approach.
Just reread
approach.
That the other week, actually.
So it's such a great...
I don't know this. Hold on.
Oh. Catching the Big Fish was this book that he wrote, which actually I think he wrote to raise funds for his meditation foundation.
Okay.
So it's a book about how, you know, Lynch famously practiced transcendental meditation for...
Hold on, let me check that the video is still going for one second. Are we still going with the video? I worry that I didn't put it on like airplane mode, and if I get a text or something, hey, great.
And so
I'm no good at the transcendental meditation being in the moment.
So the book is about sort of the intersection of, you know, his meditation practice and like what it...
And creativity and like workflow and like...
Yeah.
But it's a lot about like harnessing ideas and catching them, as he says, because he says you catch them.
He says the deeper you go, you know, the deeper you go in the psyche, that's where you catch the big fish. That's where they are, you know. If you stay on the surface, you don't really catch anything.
You catch the small fish, the small idea.
So you gotta go deep in there. That's where... things like sort of source from, and there's no really explaining it. It's just, that's what your mind does. And I don't know, that sort of, it strikes a chord, I think, for sure, with us. And when it's good, it's good. You know it.
I mean, it must be very... all those balloons will be gone at some point. And it's hard because the business is pushing you against that at all times, I would have to think. They want you to have, you know, you've got a product by a certain date and in a certain style. And
of course,
you know, money is nice because you can exchange it for goods and services. I always say.
But isn't it? Yeah, that's one of the good things about money for sure. It's goods and services. But I think you look at, not to sound pedantic or anything, but like if you look at the history of art, you know,
yeah,
like, from like centuries back, like it, this was always a thing. Like the artist was being paid by a rich patron to do, you know, paint a fresco on the ceiling of some of the family chapel or whatever, and then they would come in, the patrons would come in like months later, and they'd be like, first of all, this isn't even half done. Second of all, why is everybody naked? Like, none of this is good. And there's like, no. And the artist would be like, no, but this is art. And it'd be great conflicts, and they go broke and they die of dysentery in some ditch. And I think that's always existed, that sort of industry versus like art. Like, and I think it's integral. It's an integral part of the art practice.
So nice not to die in a ditch.
It's good not to die in a ditch.
It'd be good not to die in a ditch. I'm listening to, there's a podcast at the moment that's just come out on The Rest Is History about, they have one episode about Mozart and one on Beethoven.
There you go.
And so like Mozart is the first to go like, I'm not going to have a patron, I'm just going to make my work, I'm going to make the work I want to make.
And everybody was like, you're insane, you're going to die
people
in a ditch.
You're insane. And then by Beethoven, it's sort of like shifted into the first what musician?
Bedroom musician.
Yeah. I'm going to sit here, I'm going to scribble out.
Mozart is
Marriage of Figaro.
New hot take.
I'm making his, well, it's not lo-fi because 47 dudes getting involved. but then like the economics change by a certain point, and you don't get to choose the economic milieu in which you're living in to make the work.
You live in the world you live in.
That you get taken care of, and you're, you know, if you have children you can feed them, but that is secondary to making the work that you want to make,
I think,
which is sad and hard. I'm sorry, honey.
It's difficult, but I think the great balancing act between selling your soul and dying in a ditch.
Yes,
that's where a lot of the flavor is. You know. Yeah.
Well, who's? I mean, Austin. I think to bring it back, and I'll quick promotion of the tour. You're doing a lot of dates all across America, and where else? In Luxembourg.
So we started in Mexico a couple of days back, and we're now touring all over the U.S., a bit of Canada, and then we're going over to mainland Europe and then the UK.
That'll be so nice.
Yeah.
I wanted to get that out before, but now I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to say Austin.
Careful, bitch. God.
It's fine. If I get messy, I get messy. I think Austin has been a nice, weird, I mean, they, you know, keep Austin weird is the thing they always say, but it has, like, attracted a bunch of people who you can have a quieter, cheaper life than LA here.
Oh, yeah.
And still feel like you can tour places. I think Bill Callahan's been here for a long time. Mm-hmm. I cannot find him. He's
he seems like an elusive character.
Called the record label, and there was just a guy there who was like, all right, I'll put that through. I'll never hear back. It's fine. He's out there doing something. I think Willie Nelson is still here.
Oh, he's holding the whole thing together, I think, probably.
Yeah, I think when he goes, behind it's the scenes, going to be... Oof, a great passing of energy.
Oh, I mean,
and then it'll just be a bad tech capital.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Again, push and pull, but Austin definitely has that. I mean, the move over between like Austin and LA is quite porous. There's a lot of people from Austin who end up in LA, and I think vice versa because it's not too far in terms of climate and vibes and.
It doesn't feel especially Texan. You drive a little bit outside of Austin, and then very quickly the hats come out and the boots and weird things. Like I was at a Dallas McDonald's, and someone did flower arrangements on the tables. They had a little flower on the
table. Wow, yeah, that is weird.
Some sort of weird Southern hospitality is popping in a thing. McDonald's, as I have my McGriddle, I'm looking at a beautiful McGriddle. Flower. From. Have you had the McGriddle?
No, hell no.
That's, it'll kill you. That's good stuff. Wondering about the size of people here, it's, I think, largely attributable to the McGriddle.
Wow.
It's like, it's like a waffle McMuffin.
Yeah.
Hell, it sounds amazing.
Oh, it does, actually. I can't say enough nice things about
it. It's making me hungry.
It's changed me and improved me. I have no idea how long we've been going for.
We've been going a minute, but it's been flowing.
Well, I want to...
50 minutes, apparently, says Ted.
50 minutes is good. All right, look at that, a beautiful squirrel.
No, but it's, Austin's weird and wonderful in many ways. A lot of people are already lamenting the change, but...
Yeah, constantly. I mean, I think it's happened in the last 10 years. It's weird to think that a thing can change so quickly. And then I felt bad about all the skyscrapers getting thrown up. And then someone told me, listen, they're all parking lots.
Yeah.
Like, it just used to be... It's not like there was a beautiful historic market that's been replaced.
Yeah, yeah, it was just a vacant lot. Yeah.
There was a vacant lot, and now it's a glass tower that contributes about the same to the overall good community feeling. It's not just for me to complain about that. What's now? Hold on. What would you like to, in terms of putting people on, you know, who do you think is doing interesting work now that you would like to celebrate?
All right, here's a few off the top of my head. First off, one of our very favorite artist, songwriter, producers, who is opening for us tomorrow night in Denton, Texas, where I believe they are from. Somebody called Yalki.
Yalki.
Yeah.
Y-A-L-C-I.
Why?
C-Y, I think.
We gotta look that up.
Yeah.
I'll find out. I'll put a link to it.
Really incredible. Great music.
Incredible. Incredibly...
Criminally overlooked,
let's say. Already has a quite long history of amazing underground mixtapes and music that's been floating around Austin and, you know, the general area for some time now. Like, our friend from Texas put us onto him a while back.
There's a few artists that we're lucky enough to share the stage with on this tour that are really, I was mentioning Montreal, we're sharing the stage with Sean Nicholas Savage, who's a friend. And
there was a long stretch of the Kieran J. Callan interview that will never come out about Sean Nicholas Savage.
No, he's a very...
And I got put onto a...
influential man.
Life is Crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was walking around New York listening to the first track off that. Years from tonight. It's so beautiful. He's writing a Disney soundtrack.
Yeah.
These songs are unbelievable.
We were lucky enough to be the recipients of a secret link to his upcoming record on the last tour that we listened to in the car a lot.
Several times.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I mean...
And another dear friend and performer that we've shared the stage with a few times is someone called Ryder the Eagle.
Okay.
Ryder with a Y.
Highly recommend checking that out. One of, you know, like one of few true
artists.
True artists, like great romantics and like just absolute
puts out record
souls, like just
record after record of like heart-wrenching drum machine ballads and tours like a madman completely alone. I mean, with his partner now, Bambi, who's also an amazing artist in her own right, but he's written on our like. You know,
what a nice thing to be on the road with your woman.
Despite the fact,
man, I'm guessing Bambi's a woman. Just by
yes,
the name
yes.
Being Bambi,
Ryder is a man. Bambi's a woman. But I mean, for other than the fact that he's a dear friend of ours, like his music is genuinely like some of the
on heavy
some of
rotation,
my favorite
just,
music that's come out. I listened to Kieran's latest record on repeat when it came out. Yeah. I thought it was brilliant. Maybe his best yet.
I thought that as well. I thought it was also. I mean, it's very noisy, and it was maybe the most turbulent year of we moved here. Yeah. I got three small kids and the wife, and I was unemployed, and we had no car, and that record came out, and it was just like, that is how it feels inside my brain.
Yes.
This is great.
Yeah.
It is a 20-second harpsichord solo at the end of a song about a young man being killed in a car.
Yeah,
that is how I feel.
A couple more would be... another sibling duo from Oaxaca, I believe, called Valgur, who opened for us in Mexico.
Oaxaca.
They're based in Mexico City. They have been for the last sort of 10 years. They opened the show last night, two nights ago in Mexico City. Really incredible stuff. Sort of lo-fi, like 80s inspired ballads, but it's kind of liturgical and like ritualistic. It's
video game like
very
otaku
cool.
Kind of liturgical 80s bubblegum pop. Like, it's incredible.
Great.
Just thinking of Genesis Evangelion.
Totally.
It's
even the imagery.
It's the only two things coming together with liturgy and the anime.
No, it's kind of in that world. That was an amazing.
A last thing that comes to mind is a last artist is our friend Nuha Ruby Ra from London. Really dope, kind of like doom pop kind of like alt rocky kind of, it's hard to describe, but just highly recommend checking that out as well. Also an incredible live performer and dear friend.
She's she's kind of the punk priestess of the East London underground scene, and revered as such. She's been holding it down, and her records are simply great. So worth checking out.
Look, I appreciate that. I appreciate your time. I hope this tour is a beautiful creative and financial return. The road is long. But I'm glad you're doing it. I have a show tonight at 9 and 10:55, also on 6th Street. But I'm going to waddle down, and at some point, if I leave 25 minutes in, it's not because I'm having a bad time. It's because I have to go and talk about my thing in a room.
We're going to make sure that first 25 minutes is jam packed for you.
Jam packed.
If you would, I'd appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
Spoiler alert, it is.
It is.
All right.
Thanks for your time, James.
Thank you so much.
Yo, cheers. Thank you.
Catamaran Ho! The podcast is about me buying a boat.
Oh, nice.
I never talk about it.
Hey, many. We hope to get you on the water.
Well, look, at some point, I will say this. Are we still going on the video? All right, here's an idea right now. I had ages ago, but
float it.
If I can become successful enough, I think it would be cool to have, I would call it Boatapalooza, because I'm trying to get $500,000 for the boat. And music festivals in Australia, the dollar's very weak at the moment. We used to have great music festivals, and they've all been shutting one after the other.
I heard about this.
To start a truly great music festival. Just in Adelaide, in the hills, potentially. There was a nice one in a mall that shut down called Arcadia. That's how we all met Kieran in Adelaide. Uh-huh. So he came and he headlined this very strange abandoned mall gig.
Nice.
And did not play the hits. Played strange industrial guitar music for 40 minutes. It was beautiful.
Right. It sounds perfect.
It was really great. But look, if you could come on and help program and perform in, if we have the money... This Boatapalooza, I have no plans to make it happen. I'm remembering it now as an idea I had a year ago, back when I had more hope and ambition.
Sounds
but I think that would
awesome.
Be nice.
We would love to be involved in Boatapalooza.
All right.
That's right up our alley.
I'll
so.
Hold you to it.
Yeah, please do.
It's
please
a
do.
Verbal contract.
Right here, right now.
All right, let's get. You got things to do. You got a river to swim in. Thank you so much.
Cheers. James.
What a joy.
Pleasure.
What an honor.
Yeah,
thank you.
Pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Just do a quick clap. We'll make your life easier.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.